It's that official time when we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go! Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Yes, it is indeed. We are with you once again, Pancakes and Power Slams, with you on this Tuesday evening. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, along always with the very scholarly and wrestling gifted. He will beat you in any type of trivia question, any type of trivia contest from the year 2000 and on, maybe even 1996 or 7. Ryan Fuqua.
Yeah, good evening, our Crave Wrestling Power Slam fans. See, the show's over the limit. There you go. We're ready. We are extra ready today. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
All the way out there.
Excuse the glitch. I have no idea how that happened, but yeah. Pancakes and Power Slams, you never know what to expect. So, yeah, we are going to go to Raw, this week's Raw. First starts off with John Laurinaitis and Triple H confrontation, and Triple H's promo. He mentions Hogan and Flair, which is pretty interesting. I guess they're just letting it go as far as blurring the lines between TNA and WWE. So, and then he says he's offended by Lesnar, and you know, he cuts a promo and talks about why he's offended, not so much from the physical standpoint, but more of the he was talking about, you know, the things that Lesnar did as far as him quitting multiple times, and gives us a good history lesson, and then said, and then he's interrupted by Paul Heyman, and Triple H ends up getting subpoenaed. So I thought it was a good segment, actually. I was actually pretty intense about it, and I thought that it's a good build to potentially SummerSlam. But after this segment, I'll go into this week's news here and let you know that what they're thinking of. So it was a good way, a good build to start off Raw.
Yeah, the promo by Trip felt was real good. Nice on the mic. Always said that Lesnar is a quitter as a parent in NFL, WWE, and UFC. So that was kind of like, man, he really took those shots there. I wonder if Lesnar's sitting at home watching like, hey, I didn't okay that. But Paul Heyman, man, he always been brilliant on the mic. Like that. Only thing with this, I just don't know. From first glance, none of this really excited me. Like, just Tripp and Heyman and no Lesnar around. This is why the 20 dates a year doesn't really come in handy right now. Yeah.
That's true. Definitely true. Real quick, we'll go into last week's errors and this week's news. Last week's errors are three things. The Triple H, Vince and Shane versus Rock, Undertaker and Kane match was King of the Ring 2000. And Heyman left in late 2006 after he and Vince disagreed with ECW's direction. there was a lot of things, actually. Heyman wanted CM Punk to go over Big Show via tap out in the Anaconda Vice, and Vince didn't want that to happen. Show was actually willing to do that, but he didn't want that to happen. And then the whole Bobby Lashley thing, Heyman wasn't too big on that. And Heyman also wanted Sabu to be in the Extreme Elimination Chamber instead of Hardcore Holly. And we all saw that didn't happen. So, and then lastly, just I said Zack Swagger. Of course, I meant to say Jack Swagger last week. maybe if Swagger turns face or Roddy turns heel, they'll be called Zack Swagger. But this week's news: Mark Henry undergoes surgery today. I actually wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report. He's gone for an undisclosed amount of time. Triple H, and I'll say that for last, going to what we were saying. Couple Ring of Honor things that we'll mention. Kevin Steen becomes Ring of Honor World Champ, and World's Greatest Tag Team becomes the Tag Champs. And John Cena files for divorce. So that's that's pretty interesting. Yeah.
And, news to me. Yeah.
yeah. So. Wow. And then they're talking about Triple H and Lesnar may be pushed up to No Way Out. That is the crazy thing. That's going back to what we're saying here. And I don't know if I'd be a fan of that at all. They pushing that up from SummerSlam to No Way Out. I think the longer build would be pretty good, because if they're doing these dates thing, you know, wasting it at No Way Out just it just won't work at all. If they're having Heyman, you know, stay, and now they're doing the, you know, going to court thing and all that. That all can, so we're looking at about 3 months of this to build. I would rather see this go further out instead of it being abbreviated, and then we, you know, this all happens within a month, and yeah. So I really hope it doesn't, you know, get pushed up to No Way Out. That just wouldn't be a good thing for me, especially Triple H and Brock Lesnar, especially something to this nature. No Way Out. I think the build would be better for it to be longer, because we're seeing less and less of that lately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, bottom line, SummerSlam is one of the big four pay-per-views a year, and that's, I mean, Triple H and Lesnar right now isn't exactly a side pay-per-view caliber match, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess that still leaves me a chance with the Rock and Brock at SummerSlam, the 10-year reunion.
Yeah.
And that's quick build, so that's out.
I believe that you are going to think that that's going to happen until maybe the day of.
Yeah. 11th hour.
Yeah, so maybe, yeah, there's a good chance that that may happen. So as far as you thinking that that will happen, I think that it would be a good idea. But you know, who are we compared to the WWE? So speaking of that, it has no segue at all, but I'll just make some random segue. Be sure to call in 347-884-8452. The chat line is open, and just flood the chat room, and let's flood these lines here with calls. Be sure to call in and let us know what you feel about the Raw, because Raw definitely is a big subject this week, just because of all the articles that I've read on Bleacher Report. For the most part, people just was not happy at all. And Drake Oz, he's one of the featured columnists, and he's actually a pretty good writer. He actually wrote some things about how bad Raw was, and I believe he did four things, but it was a pretty good read. So we'll go and see and be sure to call in and let us know how you feel about Raw, and you know, of course, as we do every week, flood the chat room, and if it's a good thing to say from the chat room, I'll definitely say it. So we'll go on to the next match with CM Punk and Santino Marella against Cody Rhodes and Daniel Bryan. CM Punk and Santino wins. I actually thought it was a good match. You know, I guess we're two for two. I guess, as you can see, I thought that the beginning of Raw had the potential. This is the go home show to Over the Limit too. So of course, usually the go home shows before all the pay per views, they have, you know, that higher level of expectation. So in the beginning of Raw, I was like, okay, well, we can see, I see some decent direction here. It looks like it's going to a good direction. And then, of course, we'll get to what happened later and later and later. But yeah, it was a good match. The only thing that I would have to criticize about this match is that I would have rather seen someone tag with Daniel Bryan instead of Cody Rhodes. Because I didn't want, I don't think it was a good idea for Rhodes to put anybody over really at this point in time, and it just really didn't make any sense for Punk to go over on Cody Rhodes. That seemed like that would have been a very good refreshing feud in the first place, but you know. Seeing where the Miz is these days, you know, I would have put him in there. There's a couple other heels that could have been chosen to fit that slot. You know, why not Heath Slater or somebody random like that? So, that's the only little thing I have about that match that I didn't necessarily agree with.
I think leaving Rhodes in there, they maybe could have had Santino get the pin on him, just because I see that they're starting a little Twitter war with Santino and Cody. So, I don't know, maybe you could have had that lead to No Way Out or something. Just something a little different. I know those are secondary titles and they wouldn't be on the line, but, I mean, it's another pay-per-view going by that they're not on the line this week, so it's not that big a deal, but... I did like the team up of Punk and Santino, because Santino was losing a little bit of steam with me. I mean, this match, though, made me realize that Cody Rhodes, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that he's the only heel champion right now.
Real quick, both of the world titles, Sheamus and Punk, the mid-card title, Santino, and then the tag team titles is Truth and Kofi. So yeah, that is correct.
But we got 1,000 heels on both shows. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow. I think that conversation will continue until at least, you know, some more faces you know, come you know, to us, and there's a lot of rumors about another person possibly turning heel really soon, and we'll get to that soon. And then to me, it all just went down the sinker to me after this. We saw Beth Phoenix beat Alicia Fox. Layla comes down and face plants Beth after she did a post-match attack on Alicia Fox. I like Layla. I like Layla. I think that I'm cool with her being champion. Actually, if we don't get any karma, okay. I guess, you know, the face champion, you know, Layla. But here's my thing. What it seems like, reportedly, Beth Phoenix's injury was kayfabe, or it was not real. why didn't she just like chase the title? Because we've already made a point that, you know, it was flat. The whole return was flat for Layla. And the last thing I have to say about this, because we've already spent too much time on it, would be that she is a bona fide babyface now. She has to change that music. Oh my goodness.
Every time
I hear "You're Not Enough for Me, I'm like, oh my gosh. It has to be something more fast paced and it doesn't make sense. The biggest heel diva in the WWE right now is Eve. She has some techno fast paced music. But the babyface, the biggest babyface right now is Layla, and she has the lay cool music from like 2010. So it has to be a switch for me to give Layla more regard, a higher regard as a face diva right now.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That exactly covers it. If those two, if Eve and Layla could switch themes, that'd be great. That'd work out great for both their characters.
Absolutely. And then they announced a pre-show match for Over the Limit between Kane and Zack Ryder. Why not
perfect
just put on the show?
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, we've already made it clear that, you know, we both are fans of the pre-show concept. I'm a huge fan of it. We're going to see Kane and Zack Ryder after all of the time wondering where, you know, how are they going to rebuild that again? And they've been distant from each other for a while. And then all of a sudden, some random announcement that they're going to be on the pre-show match. So I wasn't too big of a fan of that.
Yeah, only thing for me here is, I guess, it's Kane doesn't need to be a heel anymore. Let's just have him be face. This would be a good time for him. He could go on a nice run, since it's so over heel ran with, you know, everybody else. So I think Kane right now face, that'd be great. And like you said, this Kane and Zack Ryder feud's been over, so I don't know. Does nothing for me on
Speaking of Kane, he defeats the Big Show after Laurinaitis got into it, did some interruptions. I think Kane has been there since October of 97, so he's celebrating his soon-to-be 15th year in the WWE. I think now he's done a lot of this move, and so I have to really look at some videos and really sit down and just think about it. But I think that I saw the worst Kane chokeslam of his career on Raw. I'm not 100% sure of that, but it was, that chokeslam was absolutely awful. So
yeah, it was so bad that person I was watching Raw with said, "Wow, they may not replay that because it was that bad."
And they didn't.
And they did not. Yeah, they did not.
It was.
I don't know what happened there. Yeah.
Talk about your miscues. It was just, I mean, the show bounced off the ring, and it was kind of like a swinging type of maneuver. It just really flopped. It was just not a good. It was not good at all, and I would definitely say that it was probably one of Kane's worst chokeslams since he's been there. So, and he's chokeslammed a lot of bigger people, Big Show included. So, the good part of that, it was good to see David Otunga back for all the legal stuff that he's going through with, actually being at the side of Jennifer Hudson. So, so with that, we go into a John Laurinaitis. He interrupts match for an apology for Big Show, and Show was forced to apologize, and then he begs for his job, and then he cries like a baby. He's 7 foot, 440 1 pound, 40-year-old freak, and now add crying freak to that, because that's what Eve and Laurinaitis calls him, the 40-year-old freak. And so basically, Laurinaitis considers, and then he goes out of the ring and into the ramp, and eventually he still fires Big Show. Now, I have looked at many reports throughout the day, and it was a consensus. I mean, that was a 20-minute segment, and yeah. It was a consensus, a unanimous decision that was one of the worst segments in the history of Monday Night Raw. Yeah. And I could not agree more. Like, if anything, if you want to do the whole show firing, set him up to turn heel and be Laurinaitis' henchman, you know, and maybe even being forced to be it, I don't know what they're going to do with it. But at the same time, if anything, they could have not even cut it in half. I mean, not even cut it in fourths. I mean, this is a 2 to 3 minute segment tops, and just the whole crying and it was just so awful. There's not many moments in wrestling, because I'm so used to what I'm expecting, you know, as far as the quality of the product of the WWE is concerned. But there has been not many moments that I just cringe and just want to turn the TV. Like, I know what to expect now. I'm a critic. I'm a sports writer. I write on behalf of the WWE. You know, I write, you know, for the company, you know, as far as wrestling is concerned. And I'm just a critic by nature. I've been like that, but now I can do it from a more public forum. So it's not so much about, you know, it's not so much about what to expect that makes me cringe, because I'm used to it. But this segment was just totally just poorly written, long. It was just so long. It was just so ridiculous. And I was just totally disappointed with the whole thing.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought is, man, this is just going on too long. It's tough to watch, and making show look vulnerable is always, I don't understand it. I know it's because he's big and yada yada, but it's just, ugh, bad.
Yeah.
And it's the Laurinaitis thing, man. Like, it's, who is he feuding with? I mean, seriously, Show, Cena, Punk, Trip, take your pick. Like, it's
right.
Laurinaitis is on TV too much. Like, he's on Raw and SmackDown over 50% of the show. And it's just too much, man. So,
yeah.
So, we'll talk about that in our OTL previews.
that's a good, definitely a good place. We're actually going to bring a caller in. And let us know what you think about this whole Big Show segment and Laurinaitis on TV. So let's see. We got a 614 area code. Are you there? Just say your name and where you're from and what you think. Hello, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, are you there? Your name and where you're from and what you think about the Big Show segment on Raw and Laurinaitis being on TV so much.
Yeah, my name is David, and I'm from the Columbus, Ohio area, and I didn't really fully get a chance to see all of Raw as of yet, so I guess I'm going to hear about it before I see the remainder of it. But judging from what I've heard, just pathetic. It's flat out pathetic. Big Show, to me, he is in that group of guys. He's in the great Khali column. And what I mean by that is I could care less if he's on or off the show. And it's unfortunate that he's in that column. This segment, from what I'm hearing or whatever, doesn't necessarily help his case at all either. I'm just not interested in seeing the Big Show. at all. I'm just not, just not at all.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much for the call. I agree. As far as not from seeing this, not being interested to see, you know, the Big Show, because what it seems like is that he is almost certain to be on the track to be a heel. And they do not need any more heels. I mean, it's already an oversaturation of heels on, not even on Raw, but period. There's just an oversaturation of heels. I'm sorry?
What happened, though, with Show? He just had the IC title and was getting the upper hand on Cody each week.
Yeah.
And then it just went to this. Like, I don't know. Full three. Well, not 360, 180.
180,
yeah.
And it still leaves Cody with nothing. I mean, Cody's not, he doesn't even have a spot. If anything, he's exactly, he's still not defending the title. If anything, I would have done a random Intercontinental title match on the pre-show, because there's no build, there's no build for Cody Rhodes right now. And of course, you have Tyson Kidd and Alex Riley and a couple other faces that really, unfortunately, don't mean much in the company. They could vie for, the Intercontinental title. It can be defended without a proper build for a platform like the pre-show, like they did with Santino and Miz. It's tough to see where Cody Rhodes and Big Show went after their feud. Now, many people was critical because of the feud, and post feud they both didn't really go anywhere, except for we're seeing Show just get embarrassed as a character. For someone who's been in the business for so long, nearly 20 years, and he came in the WWE, was it February of 99, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre? He debuted and threw Austin out of the cage.
If it wasn't 99, then it was 98. But it was, it was February,
Yeah. So February of either 98 or 99, he debuted. So we're looking upwards of 15 years for the company. And his WrestleMania moment was winning the Intercontinental title against Cody Rhodes. So it's kind of hard for me to really respect what they've done, in the career of Big Show. Kane too. I would actually say that. With Kane. Kane have this last World Heavyweight title. What's that?
Has Kane ever been in a main event of WrestleMania? At least Big Show has with the Fatal 4-Way.
2000,
Yeah, then he had the triple threat with Cena and Edge.
Yep. Wow, that's a very good question. He has it.
Yeah.
So I guess... Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess that warrants the question, has Kane ever had a WrestleMania moment? I guess if anything, his WrestleMania moment was beating Chavo in a few seconds for the ECW title. But, out of all the – I'm sure you had a pretty good stat as far as his win-loss record. I don't remember exactly what you said, but you said something like 6-10 or something like that, or I don't remember exactly what you said. But no, wait, 6-8 or something like that, because he's been in 14 WrestleManias or something like that. He's something like 6-8 or something like that. So out of 14 WrestleManias, we have yet to see a definitive moment for Kane. So I guess that's a good point. It's just as bad. I thought it was better, but not really. So, so we saw Brodus Clay, R-Truth, and Kofi defeat Ziggler, Swagger, and Miz. Miz takes the fall again, and it was a good match altogether. I was cool with the match, but just poor Miz. He says it's really is, and the bad thing about that is this to me. I literally saw Miz come out yesterday, and I thought of Real World, Tough Enough, the host of SmackDown. Like, I saw that Miz, and I'm like, oh my goodness, like it's an all time low. Yeah, exactly.
One of those shows. So yeah.
This is a true story. Like the old Real World or whatever he used to do that at. But I think it was on Road Rules too. If I'm not mistaken. But just the reality TV Miz. I saw that yesterday, and it's really really sad. Like it's getting further and further downhill for him to me.
Yeah. Just him on, he's on Raw, but he's not on OTL. He's not even on the pre-show's OTL. Like, this is segue leading into perfect time for Clay and the Miz to get a little feud going. Clay getting the feud. But for me, man, it's not even about Miz right here. It's more about Clay. Like, I'm not gonna pay attention much more to Brodus Clay until something definitive can come out of this. And you know, I've been like, okay, yeah, he can be a serious face, and I don't mean like the hardcore face. Just a little more. A gimmick we can take serious, because he has the athleticism. And it doesn't have to be about these juiced up guys just because he's round, you know. Like Bret Hart even said this a few months ago about where the guys that look like Mick Foley or King Kong Bundy, you know, just figure everybody looks the same now. Like everybody's just juiced up. But
that's a good point.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna. I don't know, man. It's gonna be hard, but I can't really get excited until at least something definitive. And then I thought of a name for Vicky's guys. I thought of Zig Swag was one of the names I thought of. Zig Swag.
I like it.
Yeah.
Zig Swag. Yeah, I think that's that fits them, definitely.
What's the curveball they're throwing with AW and Mason Ryan? They got me sucked in, man. They got me sucked in. That's all I can say. I'm intrigued. I don't know what's, because, you know, the internet stuff about how he was with Dolph, Mason Ryan, escorting Dolph to the ring at the house shows, and now you see Mason Ryan's involved with this, you know, like, what's going to happen?
The interesting part of that is they always show them during Swagger and Ziggler matches. So. That's a good point. Yeah, I can.
They got me wondering.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Michael Cole called them All World Productions. I didn't know that they were a production company now. So I remember it was All World Enterprises in the beginning, but I guess we're from Enterprises to Productions. I guess Epico and Primo are in charge of some type of salsa department of the production company. And Mason Ryan is the Hard Rock or something like that. And Rosa is just Rosa, I guess. But yeah, All World Productions. We'll see more of them, and I'm still kind of cynical about it, but we'll see. I'll open myself up a little bit more to All World Productions or Enterprises or whoever Michael Cole or whatever Michael Cole want to call him next week. So
I think I'm a little more okay with him this time around than last time, because last time he seemed to be a little more loud mouth and just I can't even do that type of voice he had going, and now he seems a little more laid back. They're trying to make him a little more serious, so I give him a little more flack.
For that purpose, I can reason with that as well. So we see a backstage segment with CM Punk and AJ. Good to see Alex Riley in a non-jobbing Raw spot. That's what I noticed.
He still owes Punk $50, so.
Yes.
Yeah, still not a clean win.
Yeah, exactly. He jobbed to him financially, but not necessarily physically in the match. So this is one rumor that's kind of been hovering around, and I really, really, really hope it doesn't lead to this. I hope it's not some type of love triangle feud with Daniel Bryan, AJ, and CM Punk. I just really, really, really hope that it doesn't. And the thing is, the bad part of that is that if Daniel Bryan loses on at Over the Limit, I can see that happening. Because I can, for some reason, I can see the feud extending, because it seems like the writing has just been kind of last minute in the first place. And, you know, I can definitely see that happen. They just kind of throw that in there. So it would be just as bad as the Jericho, you know, straight edge, you know, alcohol, you know, thing and the family thing that he did with Punk. And yeah, it's just like you don't have to saturate a match like this with just a disengaging angle or some type of, you know, some type of bad writing to it. I mean, I would have liked to see the pure match between Jericho and Punk, and it was kind of tamed, and you know, with the angle, and it's not been a really good build with Punk and Bryan, but I'd rather see that. I'd rather see a shorter build, and just we're going to see a pure match. I'd rather see that than just having, you know, some type of random love triangle any day. So
yeah, you're right. I mean, it's the build for this. I mean, once again, though, the 3 weeks in between was too quick. They didn't. I mean, these two got so much history together. It's insane that they would choose now to do this. But for the love triangle rumor, they're not even on the same show, so I don't know how you handle that one. But just overall, though, I don't know, man. Like, I want to be more excited about this. I know they'll do good and put on a good match, but just way too quick on the build-up, man. Not enough time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why, unfortunately, it seems like they're going to extend it with a random element to it. So Jericho defeats Orton by DQ. That was the main event of the evening. And then Sheamus attacks Jericho after he throws him into Sheamus. And then we saw at the end Sheamus and Orton post-match face-off. I actually like the four-way concept. I'm actually looking forward to, when I watch the pay-per-view on Sunday, that's actually the match that I'm looking forward to the most. Just because anytime you have matches with more wrestlers, a lot of times it adds a more element of surprise. That's why Money in the Bank is one of the best concepts to me, you know, of the year. And then the Scramble match, I was a big fan of that too. So Fatal 4-Way, I'll take it. I was actually a fan of it when they changed it. I definitely would have not been as intrigued if they just stuck with Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio. So it was cool to me. And maybe some type of Orton and Sheamus build in the making. And I'm cool with that, too. I don't think that either one of them has to turn heel. They may do it just, you know, they just may turn someone heel just because, but I don't feel like they have to turn heel. We haven't seen a face versus face feud in a while. If you can think of one right quick, I don't know. I can't think of the big face versus face feud in quite some time. So it'll be a decent. Yeah, it's been quite some time. So it'll be a good, decent build and a good face versus face feud for SummerSlam to me.
Yeah, I guess other than the past, four WrestleManias with Taker versus Michael and Taker versus Tripp, Yeah, your only face views, but yeah, the actual legit, you know, going on for a while, no. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not all the way there. Like, I feel like I should be excited for this match because it's different people getting, or different superstars getting together.
Hashtag super show.
Yeah, yeah. It's just going back to the three-week thing. Like, there wasn't enough time, so I don't know. It just seemed like it was real quick, and they just said, all right, four guys, here we go. But, I mean, it's still, it'll be a cool match, don't get me wrong, by any means. But I just feel like I should be a little more excited for this one.
Yeah. Then we saw the last segment of the evening, the John Cena and John Laurinaitis face-off. Man, I tell you what, Cena was Cena was pretty good on the mic this week. He's up there. He's definitely up there. A cheap plug for my flavor of the week next week. It's the top. I'm going to write an article next Tuesday, the top 10 best promo cutters in the WWE history. But we'll probably talk about a few of them. But I'll tell you what, man, Cena was one of my honorable mentions. He didn't make the cut of the top 10, but I don't know, man. I might have to reshuffle my my list and maybe add Cena in there because he's a he's really good, man. He's really good on the mic. I've noticed for a while, but you know, I purposely deafened my ears for it. So, but yeah, since I'm a, I don't remember exactly the title that I gave myself. Cena, some type of Cena. Rational Cena advocate or something like that. Yeah, I think that's what I said. I am a rational Cena antagonist. That's what it was. A rational Cena antagonist. Definitely not an advocate, but yeah, it's good to see. It's good since I have that type of respect for John Cena and outlook on John Cena now. It's good to see. You know, I'm enjoying his mic work. His Ace Ventura loser statements was pretty funny to me. And I tell you what, man, if anything that John Laurinaitis can credit himself to, he's gotten Cena over as a face more than any feud that I've witnessed in years.
Oh, yeah.
So if anything, you know, it's not necessarily a Austin and McMahon rehash, but, you know, it's definitely doing the job and getting Cena more pops more now than in a long, long time. So I'll give him that. New stipulation per memo that Eve sent to Laurinaitis. If anyone interferes, they're fired. And the biggest thing is if John Laurinaitis loses, he's fired. It's an interesting little addition to the match. It was an odd ending to me. Laurinaitis just slaps Cena in the face after Cena was calling him out on his big announcement that he was going to make that he never made. So, interesting little. Overall, it was an interesting little segment. I guess it was needed as the go home show for the for Over the Limit. But you know, it the show overall, it definitely didn't do anything to me as far as sparking my interest. And this the Big Show segment was just one of the worst in history.
Yeah. You mentioned the Laurinaitis slap, which I found to be very funny for some reason. I don't know. I got a kick out of that. but the stipulation definitely made it more interesting, made the OTL match more interesting because I don't see them taking away Laurinaitis this soon, and I'm wondering how Cena's going to put over Laurinaitis without any involvement from a superstar. So, and definitely, I will be really interested to see how this plays out. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point, because a lot of people are expecting Show to get involved, but he can't. But at the same time, though,
get his job back.
He's fired, so it won't. You know, he if they interrupt him, they're fired. But Show was already, you know, fired, so I guess they might do a kind of a play on that. But you know, no Tensai sighting to this week.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're going to do with that. Obviously, he's not on the pay per view, and maybe they're
everything's rushed. They can't fit everybody in now. They're rushing the pay per view.
Yeah. But I thought he was his henchman, though. And so
yeah, I know.
I guess not. So. I don't know what he is these days. I just know that he is Matt Bloom and A-Train and Albert and whatever the fans want to call him every week. So, yeah. So we'll go on to SmackDown here. Just as we do every week, just go through the matches and highlight. Just say some highlights here. Sheamus and Orton defeated Jericho, and actually it was a no contest versus Jericho and Alberto Del Rio. Some scuffling that made the referee call the match. AJ defeated Caitlin. Daniel Bryan versus the Big Show, and it was Laurinaitis did another screw job finish, forced Bellkeeper to ring the bell after Daniel Bryan got Big Show in the yes lock after a couple seconds. Ryback defeated Heath Slater. Antonio Cesaro defeated Alex Riley. Randy Orton defeated Alberto Del Rio by disqualification. R-Truth defeated Jack Swagger. Darren Young and Titus O'Neil defeated Santino and Zack Ryder. And Brodus Clay defeated Hunico. And then Sheamus and Jericho was a no contest. It was interrupted by both Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio. It's actually a few things that a number of things really that I got from the show. Nice shining wizard finisher by AJ. I like it. It was definitely Greg Muda, Gregory Helms type of memories that I got from that shining wizard finisher that she did on Caitlin. I hope it's actually her finisher for good, because it'll be a good idea. Daniel Bryan comes out, and somehow Caitlin is in the mix now. He said he's looking forward to moving to Caitlin, and AJ gets mad and walks away. But Caitlin's a face, and Daniel Bryan's a heel, and AJ is kind of like both. It's just the writing, period, is just totally scrambled to me. Of course, Goldberg chants from Ryback, and thought of Mortal Kombat, like back in 95 when I used to play it on Sega Genesis, when he said, finish him, when he screamed, finish him, at the end. And that was pretty interesting. I didn't understand Antonio Cesaro's move. He did it before, and it seems like this time it was even worse. It was like a cradle pancake pile driver type of move that just really didn't do much to me as far as his making him, you know, a credible wrestler. Finishers is definitely a big thing to have, and his finisher was just really, really bad to me. I like him, though. I mean, I followed him in ROH when he was Claudio Castagnoli, and, you know, I like him. I liked him in ROH, and I like him now. I just wish that he didn't have to put over I wish that Alex Riley didn't have to put him over. So, and then lastly, I tell you what, man, I like Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. I like them. I like the whole music that they at first when they, because we saw them live come out with that music NXT, and you know I was like, okay, this is kind of weird, you know, giving them that music, and it just really didn't fit them because they weren't really a gel team, and they got matching tights now, and they had a post match little segment there. And, you know, I like them. I tell you what, man, I like the team. They're actually one of my favorites. They had their finisher was the Decapitator back the Demolition days. They used to do that finisher. When I saw that, I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting. And it's been rumored that Goldust was actually let go because he called that spot, that one of the first tag team finishing moves that they did. I don't know if anybody remember that's listening. Titus O'Neil was on the second rope, you may have been on top rope. I think it was the second rope though. But I'm sorry. Titus O'Neil was doing the power. He did like a kind of a power bomb type of thing, and then Darren Young clotheslined. I don't remember who it was. I think it was I think it was Yoshitatsu, if I'm not mistaken. I might be mistaken. I don't remember exactly who it was, but he clotheslined him, and he landed like, oh, it was terrible how he landed. So because of that, allegedly Goldust got canned because he called that spot. So that was interesting to me that they would do that for those purposes. So it was a decent SmackDown. The only thing, the biggest thing I would say that I'm not liking about SmackDown is that we're seeing Cesaro, you know, we're seeing Ryback, we're seeing Young and O'Neil, but they're just having, it's like there's no direction. It's just a bunch of people with a bunch of spots, and I feel like I'm watching like superstars back in the early 90s again. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, these wrestlers are coming to have this spot, and, you know, the other person, they know that they're going to job. So, you know, that's the big thing I have about SmackDown, because SmackDown was actually, for past 2 or 3 years, known as more of the competitive show. You know, there were some good matches and some, you know, some very highly competitive shows that, you know, it was known for. But now I don't see that. Now I just see just a bunch of people that's having a bunch of spots that really isn't relevant, and it has no direction. There's no direction for Cesaro. I don't see him with a match with Teddy Long. There's no direction with Ryback. And Young and O'Neil, they're about, you know, 3 or 4 down on the list as far as tag team titles. So, and then, of course, you saw Hunico get squashed by Brodus Clay. So, you know, I wish the direction was a little better with SmackDown these days.
Yeah, I do remember the time when it was like SmackDown was giving Raw a run for their money. There's been maybe 2 or 3 times over the past decade of the split that there's it's been about exactly a year last month, so yeah, or exactly 10 years, I'm sorry. But there's a couple times SmackDown, yeah, I do recall, like when they had MVP, Matt Hardy, Drew McIntyre, Morrison. Like when those guys, like you said, it was just real competitive. But
Kofi was there at that time.
Yeah, like now it's just, I mean, it's like a trial and error show. So, I don't know. But for this one, I got about the same out of it as you. I like the Titus and O'Neil and Darren Young. I'm more big on Titus O'Neil than Darren Young. I definitely know who the star is on that team. Yeah,
you gotta change the hair, man. That fro is getting to me.
Yeah, that might be part of it. You are right. Yeah. At least Ryback made a little bit of progress. I mean, it's 2 weeks in a row that he's actually faced somebody on the SmackDown roster, so that's good at least. But I still say that's his old character kind of screwed him, because he's facing Heath Slater. All I could think about is how they were in Nexus together. So, and then other than that, the A-Rod getting screwed again at another debuting superstar's expense. Man, And he got popped. So I'm guessing he was in his home state. He said something about home state. I think they were in D.C., so...
Yeah, they were in D.C.
Even though it was A-Rod, I do like Antonio Cesaro or Cesaro.
Mm-hmm.
Got some different type of music, kind of silly.
Oh, I hate it. But
I was okay. Like you said, you didn't care for his finisher, but I did. I liked his moveset, a little different. Not so much his finisher, but just all around his moveset.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think Oksana's okay with him. I don't know. We'll see if they gel, if they fit. But we did get a Shucky Ducky Quack Quack out of book.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And then, the last thing, hashtag Super Show, the main event, Sheamus and Y2J was actually the main event when Raw was in our town 2 months ago. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and
that
sure didn't was. Make any – there was no point for that match, but it was still cool that we got to see Jericho. But,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Hashtag Super Show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more hashtag Super Show now than ever, really, because we were actually very surprised when we saw Jericho being pro, being announced to wrestle. Now it's just like, oh, okay, he's on SmackDown. So the last thing that I have to say that I didn't say was Booker T. I love his announcing. I might get criticized for it, but I love his announcing. He called Darren Young and Titus O'Neil's finisher the Ghetto Blaster. He said it twice, if I'm not mistaken. And, Ghetto Blaster, and I loved it. That was definitely an actual LOL moment for me. I started cracking up laughing because me just being a traditionalist, when I think of Ghetto Blaster, I think of Bad News Brown back in the day when he used to do that move. It's just an enziguri, but he called it the Ghetto Blaster. And when he said that, I just started cracking up laughing because, like, no, that's not the Ghetto Blaster. What about that move is Ghetto Blasting? I just don't understand.
Yeah.
It was hilarious to me, but. If anything, I enjoy watching SmackDown for the Booker T comic relief. Let's go to the predictions for Over the Limit. There's only 5 advertised matches right now. We will go to the first one. Of course, we don't know the order, but we'll go through the list here. Beth Phoenix against Layla. I don't see Beth Phoenix winning. I definitely see Layla having more than a month feud. If Beth Phoenix do win, it just would continue to make no sense about the whole, injury, the fake injury that they've been plugging about her ankle. So I definitely see Layla winning this one.
Layla, nothing else to say.
Enough said.
This is weird.
Yeah.
They messed up.
Let's see. We'll go to the tag titles. Kofi and Truth going against Zigzwag. I'm actually going to stick with Kofi and Truth here. They just won the titles, and I don't see them losing right now. I'm not going to say anytime soon because I don't see their reign being that long, but I don't see Ziggler and Swagger winning this one.
Yeah, I'm going Kofi Kingston and R-Truth just because they, like I said, they've just won and they've been on a roll. And then I don't know what it would do for Zig Swag anyway. So, tag. Mm-hmm. I don't think those two need the belts. They just need to split up and do singles.
Let's go to the Fatal 4-Way match between World Heavyweight Champion Sheamus defending his title against Alberto Del Rio, Randy Orton, and Chris Jericho. Now, I wrote an article last week about what I feel should be the outcome of both title matches, or both world title matches. I think that both of them should change. Because the title of the article was if the brand split means anything, both titles must switch. And I still feel like that. Both titles must switch, and you actually called that out, I think it was last week, and made that point. And I still believe that it should switch because the hashtag Super Show, we make a mockery out of it, but, you know, in all honesty, it's just, I mean, there's really no point for the split. And when there's no point for the split, there's no point for two world titles. I'm actually an advocate of two world titles just because it gives people more, it gives the mid-carders more of a chase, because if there was just one world title, to me, a lot of the mid-carders would just be totally irrelevant, because it's already a big, you know, heel-heavy roster right now anyways. And I think that both titles must switch. I'll be a fan of Jericho having the World Heavyweight title on Raw, Daniel Bryan having the WWE title on SmackDown. And, yeah, so I want Jericho to win, but in all honesty, I think Sheamus will, unfortunately, retain the World Heavyweight title.
I'm going to go with my heart here, and then I'm going to pick Jericho just because I agree with what you said. I want the switching of the titles for the shows. I think it'd be something a little fresh. I don't know. Mm. So, yeah, I'm gonna do it. I'm going Jericho.
Nice. That, of course, that would make me happy if Jericho won the World Heavyweight title again. So we will go to the WWE title, CM Punk against Daniel Bryan. Because I don't see, if it's kind of like whatever match that we see, if there's a title change, the other one has to change by default. Because I don't, you know, unless, like, for instance, if Jericho wins the Fatal 4-Way, Daniel Bryan's going to win. But if, you know, Randy Orton or Alberto Del Rio win, you know, Bryan still, Punk's going to win because they're on SmackDown. Yeah. So it's kind of like by default, which makes it unfortunate to me that, you know, Daniel Bryan, there's a really, really good chance that he won't win. And because I want him to win, I'm not going to, you know, be irrational here, and I'm going to unfortunately say that I believe Punk will retain the title.
Got to pull the trigger again, Daniel Bryan. I'm guessing with this short build-up, man, they got to do something to shock us. I don't know. So they can't. They couldn't possibly do this to us, right? I mean, the short build-up, the OTL last year, what you said was the worst pay-per-view of the year. I mean, they don't want to. They don't want to go down this road again. They got to give us something. Got to give us something.
That's where my mind is. But you know, who are we? Like I always say, who are we compared to the WWE? You know, seemingly we have better ideas, and but you know, the WWE are the ones.
Yeah. Vince doesn't cater to fans. That was a quote I read somewhere where it said that he does not cater to what the fans want.
And we absolutely see that. Without yeah. a shadow of a doubt, we see that. So we've got about 20 minutes left. We're actually going to go do the pay-per-view results for TNA and ROH because, you know, of course, the shows lead to the pay-per-views. We saw Border Wars happen this weekend. Eddie Edwards defeated Rhino. The All Night Express and TJ Perkins defeated the Young Bucks and Mike Mondo. Jay Lethal ended Tommaso Ciampa's year-and-a-half undefeated streak and defeated him. Lance Storm had a very emotional victory against Mike Bennett with a super kick. Michael Elgin defeated Adam Cole. Roderick Strong defeats Fitz Finlay. And for the, you know, to retain the ROH TV title, and Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin became the ROH Tag Team Champions again by defeating the Briscoes. Kevin Steen got his long-awaited World Championship from ROH and defeated Davey Richards. Steve Corino came out at the end to celebrate with Kevin Steen and Jimmy Jacobs. A few things I got from this is I'm definitely happy that Jay Lethal won, beat Tommaso Ciampa. It was a good build that they had, the feud that they've been having for a while, and it's really interesting that the streak, the year and a half winning streak, was, you know, the really kind of the angle to this, and I like it. I like it when, you know, you have a streak and you can use it if it's utilized right, if they do the whole streak thing right, because like they're trying to do that with Crimson and TNA right now, and it's just not working. But yeah, Ciampa, his winning streak was done right, and Jay Lethal broke it, so I think that was good. Good to see you know, Lance Storm get that win. Wrestling's greatest tag team champions again. That's always good. Fit Finley on ROH is a good deal for him, and all about Kevin Steen winning the world championship. I've actually liked Steen for a while. He's just that villainous heel, man, and he definitely knows how to play it real good. So kudos to Steen.
Yeah, I mean, everybody that I wanted to see win won, and that never happens. So, yeah, kudos to the ROH booking.
Yeah, absolutely. Card. Yep, absolutely. I to this day, I will always say, you know, I'm definitely a fan of Ring of Honor. I've been following them just about as long as I've been following TNA. They've actually... It's actually a 10-year anniversary for the both of them. They both started in 2002, and I've been following them both. So, speaking of TNA, their Sacrifice pay-per-view was this week. We saw the tag team championship change. Daniels and Kazarian defeat Samoa Joe and Magnus to become the new tag team champions. That's their first run together as a team. And Gail Kim defeats Brooke Tessmacher to retain the women's title. D-Von defeats Robbie E and Robbie T to retain the TNA Television Championship. Mr. Anderson defeats Jeff Hardy. Crimson defeats Eric Young. Austin Aries defeats Bully Ray. Kurt Angle defeats AJ Styles. And Bobby Roode defeats RVD to retain the world title in the ladder match. It's cool. The turnout, you know, for this, as far as you know, what they're looking for is cool. I'm like you. I'm just super critical with TNA now more than ever. The post. The post non Hogan and Bischoff era, the current Hogan and Bischoff era, to say it differently, it's been really critical of it, because I'm just not a big fan at all. I will say this, though. It seems like Bobby Roode's going to keep the title until October, their big pay-per-view, which is Bound for Glory, and set something up with James Storm again. So what do you do for the next, you know, 4 or so months for him? Yeah. Seems kind of predictable. Crimson, I just don't like the guy. I just really think that he's just a waste. I'm just not a big fan at all for him. D-Von, retaining the TV champ. I like D-Von a lot, actually. I just don't really see him as television champion. Happy that Daniels and Kazarian won the tag team titles. I'm a big fan of Christopher Daniels, if anybody knows that. Big fan of Christopher Daniels, both in ROH and TNA. And I tell you what, man, I have a new number one wrestler in TNA, and his name is Austin Aries. I am a huge and it's interesting, because I follow Aries, you know, from the beginning, just about when he was in TNA long time ago, when he was Aries and vying for the X Division title, and then when he changed his name to Austin Starr, when he was, you know, kind of in kudos with, he kind of in cahoots with Kevin Nash back in the day, and Then when he went to ROH, well, he was in ROH before, and then when he went back to ROH and was just a man there, he was champ for a while. And when he came back, I didn't like him, you know. And the whole time, all the other times that I just said, I wasn't a big fan of Austin Aries. But I'll tell you what, man, he grew on me quick, and I'm a big fan of Austin Aries now. And I just hope that just two things about Austin Aries. He has to drop the title. It seems like they're really, you know, making him a legit main eventer. I mean, well, not really a main eventer, but more of an upper mid card outside of the X division. So, you know, I don't want that to be a prop. I think it should be defended by X division, you know, people, if they're not really going to do that with him as far as an X division feud. And just Bully Ray just taking the job. You know, he just continues to be a jobber and put people over. He has one of the best characters in TNA, and this is definitely his best. This is the best part of his career to me. But for him just to
best shape of his life.
No doubt. And just to put people over all the time, you know, I'm not a big fan of that. So that's how I feel about TNA.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much got it for me. Just you, a little more knowledge than me, but I'm just happy that Rude is champ, and I hope you're premonition comes true with him staying champ until October. So
yeah,
he's a bright spot on TNA for me. Still don't know why, but yeah, he is.
Yeah, there's a good chance that he'll stay champ until then. So, all right, well, we got about 15 minutes left, and it is time to talk about Paul Michael Levesque, and Ryan will let you know who that really is. Well, who he is in wrestling world. His real name is Paul Michael Levesque.
Yeah, good old Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Cerebral Assassin, Terror Rising, Connecticut Blue Blood. Yeah, may not know about that last one there,
wow.
But Connecticut Blue Blood.
Nice.
Before he went to the Hunter Hearst Helmsley,
yeah.
And I was just reading up on him when I was thinking about this, and it got me to thinking, like, he debuted in WCW as Terror Rising. Mm-hmm. And one day soon, he's going to, when Vince stepped down, and it's just Stephanie and his and Tripp's company, he's going to own, I mean, you got to consider WCW, you know, how they merged and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to own that company, WWE. I mean, it's that so that he's came such a long way just from debuting with a gimmick that would never work in a company that was bought out by the company that he will own one day. Now, he didn't work to get the company, but, you know. he's still executive vice president of talent right now, and that's, I mean, it may be a bold statement to say, but I personally think that Triple H has probably had the most successful career of any wrestler. Now, I know it's kind of bold when people think about Hogan and Austin and Michaels, but from the standpoint of what Tripp is doing, and he stayed relevant for all these years, and he's still around, and he's not embarrassing himself on TV, other than when he was, what was that feud? Was that the Nash?
Last year with Nash
when he was out of shape, he had that gut, the muscle gut.
Yeah.
I mean,
with Punk too.
But it's because there's people, like I said with Hogan last week. I feel like he's tarnishing his legacy by still being in TNA and helping out with them because I just don't like it. But now you got Flair and Michaels. They've had successful in ring careers. They will always be two of the top, always in the top five. Top 10, you know, but from what he's been able to do in the ring and backstage is amazing. Then I just want to talk about a couple things here. I didn't know this is another thing that got me. I didn't know he was into bodybuilding since he was been 14.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
that goes to show why he's been on Muscle and Fitness and going back to him and Steiner pose off. That was pretty funny. Funny segment.
He comes to the Arnold Classics every year.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, just starting off from, like we said, the WCW, the bad gimmick. Then he comes and Hunter Hearst Helmsley in WWE. And to go from that to DX is still kind of like, man, this dude was just, you know, doing bows, and now he's doing crotch chopping, and he got away with it. You know, like, it's not one of those things where we're, how we're talking about Ryback and saying, like, oh, yeah, he used to be a Nexus. And then, like I said, from the DX, I didn't know this about it, but when he got in that trouble with the click, the Madison Square Garden in the cage.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know, it's rumored that Tripp was supposed to win the 96 King of the Ring, but they had Austin win it instead.
Yep.
And then that's pretty crazy. And then Austin 316 was birthed at that, so that's pretty crazy. Who knows what would have happened if that, you know, Tripp wouldn't have done that and Austin never won that King of the Ring and got over like that. But, yeah, he's just, what's the next thing here? DX to the, oh, yeah, the McMahon-Helmsley era. That, well, I liked it, but it was another one that I felt went on too long. But he was real successful on that. I mean, and I believe that is when, that was the second time he won the title, but he had won his first WWE title. At the right before that, at day after SummerSlam, and then the McMahon-Helmsley era started maybe a couple months later. Then, of course, we know he got hurt during the Power Trip feud. He was able to get away with that, him and Austin teaming up, so that's another successful thing. But he got hurt when the Power Trip feud happened, and I've always wondered about him missing out on the WCW invasion. I wonder what his spot would have been. Would it have been, would he have had Austin's spot and Austin had Angle's spot as being, you know, for WWE? Or that's always something that's always going to bother me, man. Like, why did he have to get hurt at that time? But I mean, it all worked out. It was fine, but I've always wondered about that. But yeah, he returned from injury, like I said, wins the Royal Rumble. Oh, and I didn't mention that, yeah, he won the King of the Ring too, Royal Rumble. Was it 23 times? He's a 23-time champion, or had 23 titles, and 13 out of the 23 have been world titles. That's pretty successful. But yeah, getting back to that, won the Rumble, main event in WrestleMania's, which, although if you go look at it, his WrestleMania record isn't that. I think he's only won about three or four. He doesn't have the stellar WrestleMania record that people think.
Right. Shawn Michaels, too.
Yeah. And that's crazy. You think of all the matches they've been in, you would think they've won more. But, yeah, and I'm glad you said Shawn Michaels, because that segues into him feuding with Michaels. Like, you know, he got the feud with his best friend, and they feuded for, all of 2002, 2003.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a while. I want to say he turned on Michaels twice. I think he's done it twice. I know for some reason, yeah, because the first time is when he beat him up, and then they had the picture of who it was in the parking lot, and then they came in clear, and he's like, oh, you're darn right, it was me. And
yeah.
Then the second time is when they had the DX shirts, and,
that was hilarious.
So, and I mean, that's got to be great, feuding with your best friend, so that's pretty cool. And then Evolution from late 03 to about early 05, I believe. Mm-hmm. I know they had over a year. It was close to 2 years, and it was, I mean, that, I don't know if there will ever be another stable
that good. I mean, because they were a throwback, like, you know, and it was all because of Triple H being in, liking Ric Flair so much and being heavily involved by the Four Horsemen. So that was pretty cool. But I don't know if we'll ever see a stable get back together like that again. And then look at the stars that it produced with Orton and Batista. So that was cool. Got back with Shawn Michaels. I feel, I know the DX in the beginning was real funny and raunchy, but I even felt like this watered down DX, you know, Shawn Michaels, his face, which is cool. He, you know, there's things he didn't want to do when he was with, you know, the first run at DX. And I thought they still got away with it. It was still funny to me. When they feuded with Shane and Vince, it was hilarious. I recall on a Raw when they were in the production truck messing with Vince's voice on the microphone. And, oh, man, he was out there talking, and he got high-pitched, and it was just hilarious.
The stand-back videotapes.
And then the feud with The Undertaker, pass up some other stuff. DX did feud with Legacy for a while, and that was kind of like their last stand as plugging their DVD. So that was cool. But The Undertaker feud for the past 2 years, and then to go and have it be called an end of an era, pretty cool. Not really an end of an era because he came right back, but I still think that was a way to, if Tripp never wrestled again, that, I mean, his career would have ended perfectly. But we'll see what happens with Brock Lesnar now. I just think that, I don't know, I feel like everything he's done, man, he's been face, but people like him more as heel. You know, he's okay as a face. Yeah, we love him, but, I mean, even as a heel, he's one of those guys that I need to see. We need to see Triple H on here. He's a heel. He's a face heel. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, you need to see him. Like, he was a modern-day Ric Flair type of deal. Because there's some heels that you're like, okay, you're good at your job, but I'm not worried if you're not on the card. So.
Yeah.
And he still had one of the biggest returns to me in history. That's got to be that's up there, man. That Monday, I remember it was Monday, January 7th, 2002, when he came back from injury. That they said they played his theme music about four or five
times. Something like that. Yeah.
I don't know, man. It may be a bold statement, but I feel like in and out of the ring, he's had the most successful career. Now, if you want to talk about just in the ring, I'd give you Michaels or Flair for sure. But I'd probably say Michaels because, you know me, I'm a more WWE influenced, and Michaels is my number one out of everything all time. So, yeah.
Nice. Two things that I jotted down from knowing that this is the Flavor of the Week topic here. He was Intercontinental Champ during the two-man power trip angle. And Austin was World Champ, so they had a monopoly over the titles because they were tag champ and they split, you know, the Intercontinental title and the World title, and that was, I think that was a really, really good idea to me. I just think, I mean, if you want to talk about a two-man power trip,
was no World or U.S. title back then. This was before the invasion.
Exactly.
So they had everything.
Yep. It was a total monopoly. I mean, they might have.
Anything left was European.
Hardcore was around there. Yeah. I mean, those are just really, you know, C-level titles. But
yeah.
I mean, they really monopolized, you know, the major titles, you know, in the WWE, and I thought that was really, really good. And just think, like, how they elevated the career of four people. The Hardys, Jericho and Benoit. And, I mean, they really elevated all four of their careers because those were the feuds that they were, you know, in during the Power Trip feud. I mean, during the Power Trip angle, so I was a big fan of that. So, and then the return on Raw, I jotted down. That was just definitely one of the best returns of all time.
A little less
hyped return against King Booker at SummerSlam 2007. People were awaiting that return as well. It was a little tampered to me because Mysterio returned that night too, if I'm not mistaken. It was a bit tampered to me. And then the last thing was just the Spirit Squad, you know, DX feud altogether. I just watched the little snippet of that because I was watching Legends of Wrestling on WWE Classics, and they had that whole series is phenomenal to me. But they had, I saw it again. I saw it when it first came out a few years ago, but I definitely wanted to see it again. It was the roundtable discussion was over factions, and Ric Flair definitely he was on the panel at that time, so it goes to show how long it was ago. But he made a good point of evolution. They all became world champions. You know what I mean?
Never again.
You're right. I mean, I agree. Never again. I mean, for two of the four people not to be world champs at the time, and for all four of them to lay claim that they have been a world champ, is something that even the Four Horsemen can't say. You know what I mean? That's usually take the crown as the best faction of all time. I'll give that to them as far as being jailed and all that, and just the faction as a whole and what they did for the business, and they drew, you know, big money. But Evolution, they really did it. So and then the Spirit Squad feud, you know, definitely elevated the Spirit Squad. You know, I don't really think it did anything bad for Michaels and Triple H. It elevated the Spirit Squad. So I wouldn't go as far as saying the best career in the ring, but all around, you know, that's definitely something that that could be considered. Yeah. So yeah, good flavor of the week. Next week, we're wrapping up now. Next week's flavor of the week topic will be the best promo cutters of all time. So look forward to that. I'll be writing an article on that next week on Bleacher Report. Thank you so much, as always. Follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Like us on Facebook at Crave Wrestling. Look forward to you hearing us next week. Thank you so much for all your support. Spread the word about Crave Wrestling, and we hope you have a wonderful week. Look forward to speaking with you. Look forward for you to listen to us and see what we have to offer. Enjoy Over the Limit, and have a blessed week. Thank you very much.